Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Honestly, time just seems to be flying by. I don't know where June went, and we're already almost midway through July, so it's kind of insane.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I just, my whole, everything just doesn't make sense anymore.
No, it doesn't.
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah, honestly, nope. I mean, just really ready for, you know, everybody says this, like, I'm really ready for, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and I was way behind, and so it was a podcast that was taking place before Christmas. So, and the person was like, you know what? It hasn't been a great year for me, 2019, so I'm really ready for 2020. And I thought to myself, little did they know.
Someone described 2020 to me. I thought this was perfect. Going into 2020 was like looking at this beautiful jelly-filled donut, right? It looks delicious and tempting. And then 2020 actually happens. You bite into the donut and it's filled with mayonnaise.
That, or it's like that the jelly all squirts out the back and lands on your white pants.
Yeah, something along those lines. But it had such an allure to it, like you're talking about, the person on the podcast said. But then the reality of it just continues to get worse and worse and worse and worse.
It's kind of like this story for Harry. You know, we're at that point where, like, everything is going to get worse, really, before it'll get better. And so we're here at Chapter 7, The Will of Albus Dumbledore. Of course, you could find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you do happen to be on Apple Podcasts, please give us a star rating and review. Help people find the show. Let people know what you think of the show. You can also find us on social media all over the place. We're on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. Or on Instagram at The Nerd Party. You can also find us online at thenerdparty.com, where you can find all of the shows that we're doing, as well as go to the contact section, and you can send Drea and I an email about anything that you're thinking about Harry Potter-wise or about the show. And so,
and I did. I've actually had, because I think of COVID and all that fun stuff, had a few people reach out on Instagram, one particularly out of Australia.
Oh, great.
We have a real big viewer. We have a big listenership in Australia. I don't know what it is about the Aussies that really like us, but I'll take it. It's Joshua Schurers, and I'm sure I butchered that last name, so I apologize. But they reached out to say they've been a big Harry Potter fan their whole life, and that they started listening to the podcast. And they, you know, he listened to the whole first book in a matter of a day or two. So that's commitment right there. And that him and his friends talk about the podcast and how much they love it. So I love hearing the mentions and people telling us how much they love what we do. It's always nice to hear, and it's nice to know that we're not just talking to nothingness. We're apparently talking to Australia, so.
You know, it's funny, Drea. So, you know, obviously been podcasting for a long time now, and I will say, on a whole, Owlpost is probably my most successful podcast that I've ever done. Like, the numbers consistently for Owlpost are bigger than any numbers I've ever had. So we do great, and part of that is because we have great listeners who are talking about us with their other friends and sharing us.
I know!
Thank you.
If only they could see how excited and how pink I just got by you telling me that. It's awesome. I think it's great. And like you said, it's all for the listeners. Like, I love when they ask about theories. I love when they reach out and continue the conversation. Mm-hmm. And you know, we do this for you. We do this because we love it. So, you know, we're super duper grateful and keep bringing it on, especially as we round the bend towards the end here.
Yeah, very true. Well, and thank you so much to everybody who's been with us the whole time. Thank you to if you've just found us and have been binging us. You know, again, we just really appreciate it. And so, you know, it's interesting for this chapter because, you know, we had a long evening for Harry and everyone last time. And it's, you know, it's been busy as they're beginning getting ready for the wedding. And this morning, Harry wakes up and it's his birthday. But before we actually get to the birthday stuff, unfortunately, Harry's been having dreams again. And Ron wakes him up telling him that he was muttering something about somebody named Grigorovich, which neither of them can remember who this is, but the name feels familiar to them. And apparently Voldemort is looking for them.
I find it interesting. It's one of those moments where if you've ever read the series or know anything, any of the other books, or you've seen the movies, you know exactly who it is. And it's a nice reminder that we don't actually know who this is yet. And it's a true, for me, this too highlighted Hermione's role in the trilogy, right? Because she's that encyclopedia of knowledge. And if he had said that name, she probably would have either instantly known who it was or knew exactly where to go to find out. So I find it, you know, so unique. But I do like the call out here where Harry highlights that, you know, it's hard enough to control this when he's awake. There's no way anyone can expect him to control this when he's sleeping. And that's a good point. And it's one of the few times that, you know, we had that book. I don't remember which book number it was. Now, was it book 4 where he had all of the nightmares with Voldemort and seeing into Voldemort's head? And now it's kind of starting to happen again. And we hadn't really seen it too much since then. But yeah, it's just a reminder of like how intimately connected their minds seem to be.
Yeah, and this is one of those moments too where they, you know, Harry's like, please don't tell Hermione. I mean, it's not like, again, and you mentioned it. This isn't. I'm not asking for this. I'm asleep. What am I supposed to do? But what's fascinating about this, you mentioned, you know, we don't really know who Grigorovich is. But what I love is that, you know, in the reread, you realize, though, that she has actually given you clues as to who this is, if you're really, really paying attention, which I just think is kind of fascinating. Right. And so I don't want to give any more away because that's not how our show works. But she definitely has dropped clues throughout this book specifically as to who this would be and why Voldemort would be looking for them if you're really paying attention. And so my favorite part of this whole chapter, I think, well, one of my favorite parts, because there's another part that I really like too, and I think you probably already know what that is, but
sorry, it took me a second to process what you were talking about. We'll get to it.
We'll get there. But I so love Harry waking up here and Ron reminding him that it's his birthday and that he's 17 and now he doesn't have the trace and he can just use magic to his heart's content, the same way that the twins were doing in the fifth book. And, you know, how could you not? Like, it would be so much fun. Like, you know, Harry's making things whiz around Ron's room. He's changing the color of posters. He's tying his shoes with his, you know, wand, even though it doesn't really work out that well.
There's something about him summoning his glasses and them getting him in the eye that I just, like, so relate to. that resonates with me. I feel like it's perfect. Harry's always been a little bit clumsy, not horribly, but you know, he's a little clunky, right? Mm-hmm. And so to get himself right in the eye with the glasses was just like, it's perfection.
Well,
right?
And one of my favorite things is that he's, you know, making things whiz around Ron's room and he, like, Ron has a book in his room. He's like, wait a minute. A book like that, that's kind of a bit of a departure for you, isn't it? And he's like, oh, Ron's like, hey, this is not your average book. Fred and George apparently have given a book called 12 Failsafe Ways to Charm Witches. And Ron's like, man, if I had had this book last year, things would have been so much different. I would have known how to break up with Lavender. He's basically insinuating I would have known how to get with Hermione. And Ron's really all about this book, which makes sense because this book, we have seen a vast change in Ron and his care for and an understanding of female emotions in a way that he hasn't before. So apparently this book, it really works.
Yeah, I know. And that's the funny thing. Like the whole time we're reading, you're like, something's up with Ron. And then you're like, oh, all right. All right. Yeah, I do love that he kind of puts that bow on. And then they get to go downstairs. And I feel like Harry's birthday is both the best and worst day of his life because it casts so much visibility on him that he already hates.
Right.
Being the center of attention, that it being his birthday and he's the center of attention, I feel like he both really appreciates it because there's a reason for it, but then he also kind of hates it. But I do love, I think, your favorite moment with the using magic, and then the one we'll get to. One of my favorite moments in this chapter is when he opens the watch mm-hmm. from Mrs. Weasley. Yeah. And, you know, she's all apologetic. I'm so sorry. It's, you know, a hand-me-down. It was my brother's. He didn't take good care of it. And, like, Harry does not care. And I love how she writes that, you know, he hugs her. And the hug has so many unstated things in it of how much he appreciates. Because this is like being told you're one of her sons,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Like, all of her sons have gotten that, I've, you know. And I love that there's just like this unspoken moment where Harry is truly a Weasley, mm-hmm. right? Like Harry's a Weasley. And I just think that's so sweet. And it's probably my favorite moment in the book, even more so than the later one. Although I do like them picking a fight at the end. I did appreciate that.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely
but yeah,
right.
I love that moment. And it's so quick. And then we kind of move on to some of the other gifts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we get through a lot of that. But that one gives me the warm and fuzzies.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it is a fantastic moment. And mainly because, like you said, this is the moment where they hug and like Harry's, you know, there's all these things he wishes he could say. He doesn't really know how to say. And, you know, Mrs. Weasley seems to understand, too, because, you know, she pats his cheek and then she's kind of, you know, trying to get back to everything without crying, basically. And you know, we break that moment, but it is a really wonderful thing. And like you said, you know, this is Harry has a family. You know, the Weasleys are his family. And Mr. and Mrs. Weasley, I think, make sure that as much as possible, you know, Harry feels a part of their family as almost as much as their own kids, which is a great feeling for an orphan, right? You know, to feel that mm-hmm. much love and that much acceptance. And so I think it's a really beautiful thing.
And I think that just, I don't know, maybe she is, maybe she's not, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but I also feel like they do what any good adoption family should do. And that's, you are no different whether you're born of me or brought into my life at a later date. Like, you are family. I'm going to treat you the same. I'm going to love you the same, right? She's almost talking about how fulfilling and how a family can be chosen, and highlighting almost from an adoption standpoint too, right? There's so many kids out there that need homes and loving families. And I kind of just read a little bit that way. And also for those of us who, you know, maybe come from families that are a little dysfunctional or mm-hmm. don't necessarily fulfill the needs that we have, that it's okay to choose your family. You know, in this case, Harry was orphaned and was left with some really terrible in-laws, if you will, or some terrible extended family. But, you know, it's okay to choose who you love and who becomes a part of your family. It doesn't have to be because you're related. And so mm-hmm. I always love when we drive home that Weasley family message. And this is kind of one of the last times we're really going to get that. Not to spoil it for anybody if you don't know where this book is going, but I think we've been talking about it for a while, so it's not going to be too much of a surprise.
Yeah, if it's too much of a surprise, I don't know if we've done our job right. So
I don't know if we've done it. We haven't done you guys justice yet then. But yeah, I do. I really love this moment. And I think it's what we need in order to move on to the next part mm-hmm. of this journey.
Yeah. Well, so I love that Ginny's like, hey, Harry, can you come into my room for a second? And he's like, okay. And he's like, he realizes he's never been in her room before. And I love that she is, you know, I couldn't think of what to get you. And he's like, oh, you didn't have to get me anything. And she's like, I just didn't want to get you. I mean, you know, I don't want to give you too much to carry or whatever. And so, you know, and I thought maybe I could just give you something to remember me by, you know, just in case, you know, you happen to meet some Vila, you know, when you're off doing whatever it is you're doing. And he's like, I don't really think I'm going to have a lot of dating opportunities, to be honest, which is such a funny thing to say. And then,
well, and I love here that he calls out that, like, his favorite thing about Ginny is that she's not a weepy person.
Yes, yes.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. she's been toughened up by her brothers. She can have these conversations without getting sort of outwardly emotional. Like, she can express her emotions without getting weepy. And I think that's just such a, you know, it just reaffirms why there's such a good connection between the two of them, too. Right? Like, there's just a little bit.
Yes. And so, you know, she's like, well, that's, you know, the fact that he won't have a lot of dating opportunities. She's like, well, that's the silver lining I've been looking for. And then she kisses him like he's never been kissed before. And it's the best moment of his entire life until Ron completely ruins it by barging in the door. And I love that Hermione's right behind him yelling at him for doing so. It's really interesting because I love this moment because I love these two characters. And like you said, you know, I think she does a great job of even just kind of showing and then explaining the things that they love about each other. And in this moment, you know, like once they get interrupted, she kind of turns around away from him and he thinks that there, it may be because she is actually crying. This really is a big moment. And then, you know, Ron and him have this conversation afterwards and he's like, dude, you totally like broke up with her. What are you messing around with her now? Which like, this wasn't Harry's idea. Sure. You know, this is all Ginny. And so I appreciate Ron trying to protect his sister in this way, basically saying, look, you know, you can't, and he's right. You know, you can't break up with somebody and then mess around with them and not mess with their heads. I like that Harry's taking this seriously, but he mentions, Harry's like, she's not an idiot. She knows it can't happen. It's not like she expects us to get married. And then he says that and he's immediately picturing being married to Ginny. And this is really difficult.
No,
for
he
him.
Doesn't picture being married to Ginny. He pictures Ginny getting married to some other person. And he, because, and I recall
yeah,
this
that's,
only
you're right.
specifically
you're...
because his thought is her whole future is wide open. Mm-hmm. Like she can do whatever she wants to do with her life. She can be whoever she wants to be. And that his path has been chosen for him and that he has a focus and there's only one thing that he mm-hmm. can accomplish. Right. And so that's why that stood out to me because. I think it kind of reminds him why he's doing what he's doing, right? Like he's doing it so Ginny does have
right.
a future and does yep. have those options open. And, you know, if he loves her, this is what he has to do. But yeah, no, I that part is so memorable. And the conversation, you know, I think the conversation is as adult as it can get. It is a little bit misogynistic, right? Because Ginny is basically an adult, right? She's almost an adult. She's 16 now. And she is fully capable of controlling her emotions. And she's fully capable of deciding how she wants to engage with others. And she doesn't need Ron telling the other person not to engage, right? There's an element of that where it's not very empowering for Ginny. And you appreciate it because it's a brotherly relationship. But at the same time, like she's her own person and can make her own decisions. And it's not up to Ron to dictate that. You know, and the reason I think I'm okay with it in the sense is only because that's just the relationship we've established between them in the last 6 books. Right. And if Ginny was there, she would have socked him in the face and told him as much. So I'm good with it.
Right.
But, you know, from there, we sort of move on.
And I will say, I think the thing that's, you know, Ron's right in the sense that you can't, basically he's making sure that I think Harry has, you know, the right motivations and everything. And it's just taking that into account, you know, and so, and
he's
he doesn't
doing what
know
he can.
The...
He's saying she shouldn't, you know, he shouldn't be doing those things.
Right.
And it's true, right? Right? Like, you shouldn't intentionally do things
right.
you know are going to
exactly.
hurt somebody you still
exactly.
care about. Like, I get that. So, From that sense, yes. Ron is doing his best to kind of protect both of them, really.
Yeah. But. Well, and I like earlier that, you know, they're, you know, getting things set up for the birthday party, and Ron compliments Hermione. And Harry's thinking to himself, I'll bet there's probably a chapter on compliments and 12 fail-safe ways to charm a witch. And I thought it was really funny because, you know, to me, this just showed that Ron cared enough about Hermione to make himself a better person for her. You know, and like to learn something that he didn't know. And I mean, I got to give Ron credit for manning up and being like, I don't know some things about women. I should probably learn something, you know, and he read a book about it, which, you know, that's not really Ron's forte, is to read. So I you know,
sure. It feels a little manipulative. It feels a little trickery. It feels a little bit, you know, disingenuous, but it feels like Hermione should be smarter than that. So I have a little bit of some issues there. But I think we see as we move on. I have some issues there, but I also think that's part of being a teenager, right? Like you try those things, they work or they don't work, right? Like you move on. So, to your points, yes, it's nice that he's reading. He's trying to expand. He's trying to impress her. I just worry that he's trying to bamboozle her and not genuinely.
I don't take it that way at all. I think you're being a little unfair to Ron. I think if he didn't care about her, he wouldn't do it at all. You know,
sure.
So
his first thought was this would have been an easy way to patch things up to fix things with Lavender, right? Like it feels just it walks an icky line. I'm not saying that it's not, it's entirely icky. It walks an icky line for me.
Okay.
And that's obviously just my take and opinion on it. So.
Yeah. I think the difference that I see is that with Hermione, I think Ron, it's not just that teenage like hormone experience. Like there's something more with Hermione, which is why I think he's trying to do things differently. You know,
I can see that.
It's interesting too. You know, we get a little moment here, and we mentioned this last time, but when Lupin and Tonks get there, he doesn't look very happy, and he can't figure. Like Harry's like, I can't figure out what's going on here. You know, the rest of the party seems great, for the most part. They're having a good time. Hagrid's there. He gives, Harry this really cool moleskin, pouch that you can put things in and only the owner can take out, which is really cool. You know, Charlie's there and him and Hagrid are having a great time talking about Norbert, who they called Norberta now because they realized that she was a girl dragon and not a boy dragon.
I love the reasoning is because she's more aggressive and angry. I know that's probably also terrible, but there's a part of me that's like, yeah.
It's pretty funny.
You said that.
It's pretty funny. So everything's going swimmingly until Mr. Weasley's Patronus shows up and says that the Minister for Magic is arriving with him. And this shifts the party completely. Because, well, he crashes the party.
Yeah, a handful of people leave. Lupin and Tonks leave. I feel like somebody else left too. But it definitely changes the dynamic. And it also, you know, we just kind of have come to accept that Scrimgeour is just not a very pleasant man. And this interaction does not change that at all. And it turns out he's there because they have recently released the contents of Dumbledore's will, which we know has been several months now because he died at the end of the school year last year. And now Harry's birthday is usually right around the start of the next school year. So it's been several months. And then, you know, he asks to speak with our favorite Trinity here and to talk to them in private, which kind of also makes everyone really uncomfortable. And as we go through this section, you can tell that Mr. and Mrs. Weasley are not far away, right? They're not in the room, but you can tell they're doing everything they can to be as close to the conversation as they possibly can be.
Well, and what's really interesting is that he also wants to talk to them privately, one-on-one, and that's where Harry's like, no, you can talk to all of us together.
Yeah, they stand together, which was smart, and they totally glossed over that in the movie, and I think that's actually, it could have been a super simple one-liner or two-liner in the movie, but it would have, I think it's so significant, right, is that they're like, no, you can talk to all of us, or you can talk to none of us. That is our... We separated ourselves from everyone else, but we're not separating ourselves from each other. Mm-hmm. And it turns out to be the best decision that they make in a while.
Well, and it's because, you know, they get into this whole thing with Scrimgeour about the idea that, you know, it's been at least a month because, you know, they've had these things for at least 31 days and they've confiscated them. And Hermione realizes that they've been going over them, trying to figure out, you know, what these things are and why, you know, Dumbledore would have left them to this Trinity. And Hermione just keeps coming at him with the law, which I thought was funny. And I love that he's like, you're not planning on, you know, going into magical law enforcement, are you? And she's like, no, I was hoping to do some good in the world. So they're all super snarky to him. And so it's very clear that the ministry has done everything they can to try and figure these things out, and they have not been able to, and they don't have the legal right to keep them anymore. So they, you know, are required then to give these items to them. And we learn that Dumbledore had left Ron his Deluminator, and we...
I'm sorry, who? He left Ronald Bilious Weasley.
Yes, Ronald Bilious Weasley.
His middle name just cracks me up. I had to get it in there.
And we can't figure out why. We also left Mrs. Granger. We left Hermione Jean Granger a copy of Tales of the Beetle Bard. And then we have the snitch. The first snitch that Harry ever caught was left to him. And we also learned something interesting about snitches here that we did not know. They don't get stitches. The first person that touches a snitch, each snitch has a flesh memory of the people that have touched it. And so Scrimgeour believes that Dumbledore may have been able to enchant the snitch to open up and conceal something for Harry because it's just, I mean, the snitch is large enough to hold something inside of it. And he touches it and nothing happens. And so the last thing that we learned that was left was the Sword of Godric Gryffindor, which Scrimgeour has decided is a, you know, piece of magical property that belongs basically in a museum. He sounds like Indiana Jones. It belongs in a museum. And he will not give them the sword because of that.
Right. And that really makes things sort of escalate. Tensions get really high and tempers really flare here, you know, after, you know, all of this with Scrimgeour sort of challenging their relationships with Dumbledore and all of that. It gets to the point where he sort of is confrontational. They say he presses in his cane or his wand into Harry's chest and burns a hole in his shirt, right? Which is essentially assault, if you will. You know, Harry keeps, it's amazing though, because this is real, real personal growth for Harry. He keeps his temper. He even calms Ron down and says, you know, this is what he wants. He wants you to point your wand at him. He wants you to give him a reason to arrest you and detain you. Like, don't give him the option, right? And, you know, that's when sort of Mr. and Mrs. Weasley bust in because they hear their loud voices, which tells me they weren't far away in the first place. They're kind of eavesdropping, if you will. And Scrimshaw sort of says his goodbye and his departure after Harry sort of goes, all of this, you know, he calls him out on, you haven't found Mad-Eye Moody. You've spent all this time going over these different artifacts to find out what Dumbledore was trying to tell us. But you should be out there trying to catch Voldemort, protect the population, myself included. You know, he really calls him out, and that just sort of is the end of it. And, you know, he says something to the effect of, you know, and all of that being said, and you still want us to trust that you have our best interest at heart and you want us to be on your side, right? Why would we do that? And that's sort of where things end between them. And Scrimgeour sort of takes off and goes back to the ministry, and Harry and the trio sort of run upstairs to decompress. I like to think of it, they decompress about what just happened to them. They have like a little vent session, is how I think.
Yeah,
of it.
And I think, you know, like you, I love the way that Harry just legitimately calls out Scrimgeour. Like, your government has been pretending to do things, but none of it has actually been helpful. And why aren't you doing actually helpful things? You know, if you really want me, if we're really on the same side, stop pretending to do things and actually do something.
Stop covering stuff up in the Daily Prophet. Actually acknowledge, you know, like Mad-Eye Moody died and things like that, and we can move on.
Yeah, I do love this session of decompression that we get.
I do too.
And I think it's really interesting, as you know, I love that Hermione uses the spell so that people can't hear what they're saying. And I love that Ron's like, wait a minute, I thought you didn't like that spell. And she's like, times change. So it gives you a sense that like there has been quite a bit of growth for Hermione and understanding the reality of the situation they're in. And, you know, again, that the war changes things. So yeah. I thought that was really an interesting thing to see from Hermione specifically, you know, because
she's such a rule.
Yeah,
follower.
Exactly.
Like, that would be
exactly.
The last person you'd expect to do that. But here's also kind of a deviation from the movies, which is what most people are familiar with, is, you know, you mentioned that snitches have a flesh memory, right? And in this situation, Hermione reminds Harry that he didn't catch the snitch in his hand, right? So it didn't do anything when he was handed it, because he caught it in his mouth. And now we're looking like real far back. We're looking like six books. We're looking like 5¾ of a book back, right? To remember that. And so, you know, that's something where she, it's so smart because she didn't say anything in front of Scrimgeour. She must have had the epiphany at the time, right? But, you know, this happens much later in the movie than it does here in the book. And, you know, he's told, also Harry realizes it in the movie, and in here Hermione is very, very clear, and she remembers and she's on top of it and things like that, which is so Hermione. And so, you know, we find out the snitch actually has a message on the outside of it, and it says, "I open at the close," which is going to become so important as we move on. But the rest of them, they're still trying to figure out why they have what they have.
I love the way too that, you know, they're working together here, because Harry's just so smart. He's like, I didn't really try that hard, because why was I going to try hard in front of him? But yeah, I swallowed this thing. And so, and the fact that it says, I open the close, they have no idea what this means, which is difficult because they don't have any idea really of why that, you know, Ron would have been given the Illuminator. And Hermione doesn't even know what this book is, which is a shocker to everyone, until, you know, Ron tells
Except
them.
Except for Ron.
Yeah. Ron's like, wait, I know that book. That's the Tales of Beedle the Bard, and it's a kid's book. And I think it's so funny because Ron has to be reminded, we grew up as muggles. We don't know these things. You know, we had Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and Cinderella. And I like Ron ask, is that an illness?
Yeah, I mean, it's that moment where that collective knowledge of the three of them is so much more and provides them so much more insight than each of them could individually do. Mm-hmm. And I do love that it's so interesting too, because you think of Hermione as being so studied and learned that she's almost so confused why Dumbledore would give her a children's book. She's like, wait, this isn't useful. Why did you give this to me, right? Like, I'm not learning anything. You didn't give me a book on Horcruxes. You gave me a kid's book. And now I'm really confused. So I think those, that and the Deluminator, to your point, are still very, I mean, the Snitch as well. They're all big question marks. And we haven't even, they didn't even really discuss too much. They talked a little bit about, well, he gave you the sword, but we don't have it. But why would he do that? Like, all of this is just huge question marks. But they know it was done with purpose. And none of it was a crazy old man or anything like that. They all, they know that these are all going to be very important pieces to the what's ahead of them.
Well, and what I like is that obviously these things are going to be important. And so what I think is so brilliant about what she's doing here with the children's book that she gives to Hermione is what she's saying about children's books and how important they are. That the stories they tell, the good ones, the stories that they tell are things that should not be forgotten. And I think obviously, you know, Harry Potter is a children's book. It's written for kids, and especially as they grow up. And so she's reinforcing the idea, Rowling is reinforcing the idea that what we read as children is very important. And to not forget that, to not negate that. And just because it's a children's book doesn't mean it doesn't still have things to teach people that are older. And I think there's a real beauty in that, because the best children's stories are ones that are timeless in that sense. And they allow us to continue to learn things from them, even as we move forward in life. And so I think that is fantastic. And it's kind of a great way to kind of end this, because they can't think of anything. They can't figure anything out. And it's getting late anyway. And they've got to be up for the wedding tomorrow. And so they all go to bed, and that's where, you know, we end the chapter as we wait for the wedding next week. So a lot of setup in this chapter for things that will pay off later, and a lot of things going on too. And so a lot of relational movement here in this chapter between, you know, young romances, which is always fun for the series. And I just can't wait, because, you know, the wedding's going to happen and then everything just explodes from there.
And the thing we brushed over earlier, because we were really excited to get to the conversation about Ginny and Harry. But, you know, there's also going to be a lot of underwear being packed and a lot of people really embarrassed about their underwear coming out of the wash and getting packed in the knapsack. And that part just killed me, because she kind of just slides it in there. But yeah, I mean, there's that too. We gotta make sure we pack our underwear before we save the world.
The fact that Hermione's been packing all of their clothes, and Ron is not quite comfortable with the fact that Hermione's packing his underwear.
He didn't quite understand what that meant. And then, well, I'm just waiting for your underwear to come out of the wash, Ron. And he's like, what?
Oh, man.
Yeah, pretty great.
It is pretty funny.
We can end on that.
It is pretty funny. So, well, I'm excited to get to next week and to the wedding. But before we get there, Drea, where can everybody find you online?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And of course, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero under the name MattRushing02. I am here on the network doing Arrested Negotiations. It's a Star Wars podcast, doing that with John Mills every week, which is a ton of fun. And then I am on the Trek FM network doing two shows. One is called The Orb. I do that with Chris Jones. When we get a chance, we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And also doing the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, talking about all of the fandoms we love. So thank you so much for checking your Owl Post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.